Hello, and welcome to Sonoran Desert Institute's School of Firearms Technology's official podcast, The Gun Rack. Hello, and welcome to The Gun Rack, Sonoran Desert Institute's School of Firearms Technology's official podcast. I'm Josiah Upper. Folks call me Joey, and today, let me tell you a little bit about what we're going to do today. I've not done this before, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We can call this a news drop, but we do those on occasion, and this is not quite like anything that we have done in the past. So we're going to call this Facts and Oddities. Facts and Oddities. So I have gone forth scouring the internet to find three stories that I think will be of interest to you guys. I'm going to relay those stories to you, and I have ranked them 3-2-1. So if the first one doesn't catch your fancy, hang tight, because I think the last one in particular definitely will. So let's get started. Story one is actually something fairly monotonous, but it has to do with one of the most iconic items in the United States military, and that is the world-renowned stealth B-2 bomber that the United States has. If you don't know what it looks like, if you've ever seen a video of a flying chevron, that's about it. It is a one-of-a-kind look, absolutely gorgeous aircraft and piece of machinery. So, what's up with the B-2 bomber right now? Well, the B-2 stealth bomber was developed and first made its way into the air more than 30 years ago. This is according to War History Online. And in fact, unless I say otherwise, all three of these have to do with War History Online. I have done sourcing from other places, but War History Online does a great job of bringing in the important facts and leaving out some of the other stuff. So, fact checked all these with War History Online and some other sources. Anyway, B-2 stealth bomber, more than 30 years old at this point, or at least it made its first debut more than 30 years ago. It's a single-wing radar deflecting plane, or at least that's the idea for it. And it was beyond state-of-the-art when it first came out. Today, the B-2 aircraft is going to be retired. Not today, but within a decade. I want to say the first one goes down in 2032, but don't hold me to that. So we're looking at not too long for that. And the reason for that is the bomber was fantastic for 30 years, and it will be 40 years by the time it goes. But it's 40 years. Like, the technology simply has caught up to it, and that's just how it is sometimes. However, the reason I bring the B-2 to you today is not because it's going to be retired in a few years. The reason I bring it to you today is that right now, the Air Force is attempting to make it impervious to another form of attack. Obviously, when it was designed, it was created to deflect radar, which not an attack necessarily, but definitely a tool that you can use both offensively and defensively. Anyway, the Air Force is trying to make the B-2 capable of withstanding an electromagnetic pulse attack, also known as an EMP. It is a kind of, I'm just going to pull right from War History Online, it's a kind of shockwave released from the detonation of a nuclear device or from a naturally occurring geomagnetic storm, which could disrupt power and onboard computer systems. And the greater fear, more than the idea that nukes could suddenly be dropping out of the sky, is that the EMP weapon, an EMP weapon, could be being created, could be in the middle of development by either Russia or China, or likely both. If you're smart, you want to find all the ways that you can to gain an advantage over a potential enemy, and EMP seems like a very easy way to try to get a leg up on the competition. So there is a concern that an EMP is being created by either Russia or China. And there are actually another note is that directly from War History Online, it has been suggested that military intelligence is aware of warheads developed by both parties that are capable of traveling at Mach 20 and delivering an air blast over North America that could wipe out the U.S. power grid for at least a year, which is pretty flipping scary. So, obviously, the U.S. wants to be prepared to counter a threat like that, no matter who it comes from or what area of the world it comes from. And if you are a nation trying to maintain offensive capability, you are obviously going to want to have the ability to withstand an attack of that nature. So that's story number one. The B-2 is looking to be upgraded, or the people that work with B-2s are looking to upgrade them to protect against EMP attacks. Okay, let's talk about number two. Number two has to do with one USS Johnston. It was a battleship, or it is a battleship, that was sunk during the Battle of Leyte Gulf in World War II. It was a Fletcher-class destroyer, and it sank on October 25th, 1944. The USS Johnston has now officially been found. A while ago, there was a dive. We'll get into it in a minute. There was a dive that believed that they had found it, but the diving equipment could not get low enough to identify it successfully. But now we have, and this is not interesting just because shipwrecks can be intrinsically interesting when they're tied to military history. But this shipwreck, which is in the Philippine Sea, is the deepest shipwreck that has ever been found. The deepest one. So this ship, numbered 557, has an absolutely wild history. So the USS Johnston was sunk during Leyte, as I mentioned before. It was commanded by one Commander Ernest Evans, who was one of the sailors that was lost during the sinking of the ship, and he was awarded the Medal of Honor posthumously. Why was he awarded the Medal of Honor? Well, let me tell you. According to War History Online, the U.S. forces in this particular portion of the battle near Samar were overmatched by Japanese naval forces that were moving to attack them. Evans joined his men on the deck to provide fire support while the Japanese wailed on them with everything that they could. After losing engine power and communications, the Commander Evans issued commands through an open hatch to men that were turning the rudder by hand. I mean, it's unbelievable. After 3 hours, the Evans gave the order to abandon ship, and the ship sank. But let's get into details of the discovery. So, a remotely operated vehicle back in 2019 found what they thought would be portions of the USS Johnston. However, that vehicle, as I mentioned before, could only dive to 20,000 feet. And the Johnston was submerged at 21,180 feet. Excuse me. So, they had to go back out again, researchers did, and it was found by a retired Navy commander named Victor Vescovo. Vescovo reportedly piloted a remote-based submersible vehicle in two separate eight-hour dives. The robotic submersible is not tethered by anything up top, and does not have any limitations in regards to depth, reportedly. Has high-definition cameras, and was able to record the wreck, and they were positive that it was the wreck because its number 557 is prominently displayed on the wreckage. In fact, the I'm looking at the image now. Of course, the ship has all sorts of stuff on it, but it looks like it was created to highlight the 557. It just sticks out in the middle very brightly. And retired Rear Admiral Sam Cox, who is the director of the Naval History and Heritage Command, said that he was impressed with the footage of the wreckage and that he considered the crew of the USS Johnston to be a worthy example of honor, courage, commitment, and valor. That's according to, as I mentioned before, War History Online. So those who crewed the USS Johnston sacrificed not in vain. The Battle of Leyte Gulf was hugely important for the American Navy during World War II. If you don't know much about the Battle of Leyte Gulf, I strongly encourage you to go do a little homework on it. It is, along with many other naval battles, is hugely interesting. All right, so that was number two. Number one, drum roll please. This is a story that comes from the Czech Republic. It is about a weapons amnesty program. This one is was reportedly nationwide and was designed to help people who had weapons that they did not have the required paperwork for. And, of course, forgive me for not knowing the finer points of Czech Republic firearms laws. Obviously, they're going to be very different than ours. That's not really the point of this particular story, however. If they owned weapons but not the required paperwork, they were allowed to go to the police who would help them obtain the proper documentation so that they could keep the weapons legally. And they, as part of their advertisement for the campaign, they had a tank roll up to a couple of shocked police officers, and then a guy pops out of the tank, tosses them whatever they need to access the tank, and then just walks away, right? So, goofy video. It's pretty funny, actually. Except someone did it in real life. One guy, some Czech dude, who might be my favorite dude now, who remains unnamed, and probably for the best, brought in a Soviet T-34 medium tank painted Pepto-Bismol pink. It looks like it's a giant chalk creation. Brought that one into the police, as well as an SD-100 self-propelled artillery platform. So, yes, I know propelled artillery platforms and tanks aren't quite the same, but two tanky things this guy brought in, and the man said that he had believed that he had obtained the weapons legally, but wanted to be sure that they had properly been deactivated. Police checked out both tanks, found that they were indeed harmless, but that the methods used to deactivate them were not up to code, up to current law, what have you. So, the owner was reportedly allowed time to fix these issues in order to keep these tanks. I'm looking at some different things. I found another one that said that the guy was hopeful to retain them. But the point is, my man brought in a T-34 and an SD-100. Can you imagine being the cops on the receiving end of that? And why is it pink? It's so pink. I know this is an audio medium, the podcast, but I so wish I could share this with you guys. It is absolutely crazy. And the SD-100's kept normal. It almost would make more sense if they were both pink. But nope, just the T-34. I'm very confused by that. And of course, for those who don't know, the T-34, one of the most prolific tanks in our short armored history. It was at the time an absolutely amazing platform. And the SD-100, I know way less about, so I'm not going to opine on. But there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. There are three facts and oddities, stories. I hope you enjoyed them. That tank thing just blew my mind. I have no idea why that was the way it was. But for now, that's the gun rack. Have fun out there. We'll see you at the range. Sonoran Desert Institute is an online school located at 1555 West University Drive in Tempe, Arizona. Accredited by the DEAC. For more information, please call 800-336-8939 or visit sbi.edu.